Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
Some things from childhood don't return as memories so much as sensations. You don't remember the room exactly, or the year, or even how old you were without doing the math later. What comes back instead is the way the air felt on your skin, the way your stomach tightened before your mind had time to understand why, and the sense of being watched, not in a threatening way at first, but in a way that made the dark feel occupied. This began when she was very young, around 5 years old, at an age when fear still came second to curiosity and comfort mattered more than logic. The world at that age wasn't neatly divided into what was real and what wasn't. Dreams bled into waking moments. Imagination filled in gaps without being asked. Nighttime had its own rules, and adults didn't always have answers that made sense. The first night it happened, she wasn't thinking about glowing red eyes or anything supernatural at all. She was thinking about a spider. It was big. Bigger than any spider had a right to be in a child's bedroom. Scuttling across the floor near her closet, its legs moving fast and wrong in the dim light. She hated spiders back then, not because one had ever bitten her or crawled on her, but because her older sister hated them, and fear has a way of being contagious like that. She screamed, she cried, and she panicked, in the way children do when something small suddenly feels enormous and out of control. Her mother rushed in, tired but patient, doing what parents do in the middle of the night when fear is loud and logic is quiet. Her sister climbed down from the top bunk, irritated and half asleep, already annoyed that her rest had been interrupted. The spider was crushed quickly and efficiently, ground into the carpet with a tissue in a way that made her feel unexpectedly sad. Even then, she didn't like watching things die. The moment passed as moments like that usually do. Her mom soothed her. Her sister told her to shut up. The door closed, the lights went down, and the house returned to its familiar nighttime rhythm. That should have been the end of it. It wasn't. A few seconds after the room settled, after the silence became noticeable again, she saw something by the door. At first, she thought it was a reflection, two small points of red light catching the glow from the hallway. She waited for them to disappear. They didn't. They hovered perfectly still, just above the height of the doorknob, then slowly rose higher. They weren't blinking. They weren't flickering. They weren't attached to anything she could see. They were eyes. They glowed red, steady and unmistakable, and trailing behind them were thin, stringy shapes like tendons or nerves stretching back into the darkness where a body should have been. The longer she looked, the more wrong the proportions felt. If those eyes belonged to a man, he would have been impossibly tall, 7 feet or more, too large for the space he occupied. They hovered there for several seconds, long enough that fear should have arrived. It didn't. Instead, she felt curious, calm, almost comforted. The absence of fear is what unsettles her the most now, looking back. At the time, it felt natural, like noticing something new in a room she already knew well. The eyes drifted forward, gliding closer to the floor and pausing where the spider had been crushed into the carpet, as if inspecting the spot. Then they rose again and turned toward her. She lay on her side, staring back at them, her breathing slow, her heart steady. The eyes floated closer until they hovered near the foot of her bed. She sat up slightly and they rose with her. The air in the room cooled, not sharply, but noticeably, like a window cracking open somewhere unseen. It wasn't cold enough to be uncomfortable, just enough to be different. Then she felt pressure on the mattress near her feet, not heavy, not threatening, just present. Like someone very thin had sat down. Then a voice spoke. It wasn't loud. It didn't echo. It didn't growl or command. It was calm, masculine, and gentle in a way that wrapped around her thoughts instead of cutting through them. It told her to go to sleep, repeating the words slowly and evenly, promising protection in a tone that felt less like instruction and more like reassurance. Go to sleep. Go to sleep. We'll protect you. The words felt like a lullaby spoken directly into her head, bypassing fear entirely. She laid back down, pulled the covers up to her chin, and felt the pressure on the bed shift slightly, as if the presence had leaned forward. The closet light turned off. She never saw how. She drifted to sleep, feeling safe. From that night on, she felt them. Not constantly and not always visibly, but present, watching, guarding. She slept better when they were there. Nightmares came only when they weren't. The dark felt emptier without them, as if something essential had stepped away. She didn't talk about it much. Kids learn early what earns concern and what earns dismissal, and this felt like something that belonged just to her. Something private. Something helpful. Time passed the way it always does in childhood, in uneven jumps and half-remembered stretches. The presence faded into the background of her life, not gone, just waiting. She didn't question it. She didn't analyze it. It simply was. Years later, in fourth grade, she saw them again. She was older then, maybe 11, old enough to name things that scared her and to give shape to what had followed her quietly through so many nights. She gave them names, the way children do when they want something unknowable to feel familiar. She called them Fred and George. She didn't tell anyone about Fred and George when she named them. Saying their names out loud felt unnecessary. Almost disrespectful. Like explaining a secret that didn't belong to anyone else. The names were for her. A way to make sense of something that had been present for so long it no longer felt strange. By then they no longer startled her when they appeared. They didn't need to. Their presence announced itself in subtler ways. The air would cool just slightly, enough that she noticed it against her skin. The room would feel fuller, as if silence had weight. Sometimes she sensed them before she ever saw them, the way you can tell someone is standing behind you without turning around. When they showed themselves, it was almost always the same. Two glowing red eyes hovering in the corner of the room, usually near the door. If she changed bedrooms, they adjusted without comment, drifting to the corner near the closet instead. They never followed her beyond the house, not to friends' sleepovers, not to hotels, not to relatives' homes. Only there, only at night. At first, their presence felt like a gift. On nights when she couldn't sleep, when her thoughts raced or the house felt too quiet, she would whisper into the dark and feel a response. A gentle tickling sensation at her feet. A faint pressure on the edge of the mattress, light enough that it barely dipped the fabric. It was comforting in a way that didn't demand anything from her. They didn't ask questions. They didn't judge. They were simply there. As she moved through late childhood, the house itself felt different to her than it did to anyone else. Corners mattered. Shadows mattered. Darkness wasn't empty. It was layered. When Fred and George were present, the shadows stayed where they belonged. They didn't creep. They didn't move. The room felt orderly, contained. On nights when they didn't appear, the darkness felt restless. Those were the nights she had nightmares. The kind that left her heart pounding, her sheets twisted around her legs, her throat tight with half-formed fear. She began to associate their absence with vulnerability, even if she didn't consciously frame it that way. When she woke from a bad dream, she would lie still and wait, listening for the subtle signs that they were near. Sometimes they came, sometimes they didn't. By the time she was a teenager, their appearances had settled into a strange rhythm. Roughly once every couple of months, like an irregular cycle she couldn't predict but had learned to expect. When they appeared, they no longer touched her the way they once had. They didn't sit on the bed anymore. They didn't tickle her feet. They hovered in the corner and watched. She told herself that meant she was growing up, and in some ways, she was. She had more awareness now, more self-consciousness. She understood that if she told someone about glowing red eyes in her bedroom, she would be met with concern at best and disbelief at worst. She learned to keep certain thoughts to herself. She learned which fears could be spoken and which needed to be managed quietly. She also began to notice changes in herself that had nothing to do with Fred and George, at least on the surface. Mood swings that came harder and lasted longer. Thoughts that spiraled inward. Moments where she felt unbearably small, like nothing she did mattered and nothing she felt would ever change. These were not things she shared easily. When she lay awake at night staring at the ceiling, she sometimes spoke to them without realizing she was doing it. Not out loud, just internally. Questions, complaints, small private confessions she didn't have language for yet. They never answered with words, but she felt them listening. Looking back, she can see how easily comfort turned into reliance, how the quiet presence of something that never contradicted her, never challenged her, never told her she was wrong, became a constant backdrop. When she felt low, their presence felt like agreement. When she felt unseen, they were watching. When she felt afraid, they were there. They never said they loved her. They didn't need to. The idea formed on its own. As she got older, their distance increased. They remained in the corner, always watching, never touching. The air still cooled when they appeared, but not as noticeably as before. Sometimes she wondered if she was imagining them, if they were fading as she matured. And then slowly, something else began to change. On a few nights when she sensed them nearby, the comfort didn't arrive the way it used to. The air felt different, heavy rather than cool, pressed. She would shift in bed, trying to get comfortable, and feel restless instead. The sense of being watched remained, but it no longer felt protective. She ignored it at first. She had learned to dismiss her own discomfort, learned to push through unease and call it imagination. After all, nothing had ever hurt her before. Nothing had ever given her a reason to be afraid until the night everything broke, started the same way it always had. She went to bed. The house settled, the room darkened. She lay on her side, half asleep, waiting for the familiar coolness that told her Fred and George were there. Instead, the air grew warm. Not gradually, suddenly, like heat blooming outward from the walls. She shifted under the covers, confused, then uncomfortable. Her skin felt damp. The silence pressed in. She sensed them immediately. They were in the corner. But something was wrong. The feeling wasn't calm. It wasn't quiet reassurance. It was sharp, electric, and angry in a way she had never felt before. Her heart began to race. Not from fear at first, but from confusion. This wasn't how it was supposed to feel, but without thinking, she whispered into the dark. What's wrong? And then the response was immediate. They rushed her. There was no drifting, no hovering, no gentle presence settling onto the bed. The weight slammed into her chest so fast, it knocked the breath out of her lungs. She was pinned to the mattress instantly, the pressure crushing and solid, nothing like the thin, almost fragile presence she remembered. This wasn't they anymore. It was it. The light snapped on as soon as it touched her, flooding the room with harsh brightness. She couldn't move. She couldn't scream. Her arms and legs felt locked in place, her body unresponsive beneath the weight. The only thing she could see were two massive red orbs hovering inches above her face, brighter and angrier than they had ever been before. They weren't watching anymore. They were furious. The thing growled, not loudly, but viciously, the sound vibrating through her chest more than her ears. The words came fast and sharp, meant only for her. You're a fool. You're helpless. You're helpless. There's nothing you can do. The words landed with precision, cutting directly into thoughts she hadn't spoken aloud yet, feelings she hadn't shared, doubts she barely admitted to herself. The heat intensified, the air thick and suffocating. The thing grabbed at her, yanking the covers off the bed and flinging them across the room, exposing her completely. She felt hatred in every movement. She struggled uselessly beneath the weight, her mind screaming, while her body refused to respond. The red eyes burned above her, filling her vision, eclipsing everything else in the room. And then its hands closed around her throat. The pressure on her throat was sudden and absolute. Fingers, or something shaped like fingers, tightened just enough to make breathing painful, then impossible. Her vision blurred at the edges, darkening in a way that felt both physical and distant, like she was slipping backward inside herself. The weight on her chest pressed her deeper into the mattress, and for the first time since she'd known Fred and George, panic broke through the strange paralysis that held her body still. Her thoughts scattered. There was no prayer, no plan. Just a sharp animal understanding that something had gone very wrong. The thing leaned closer. The red eyes filled her vision, so close they no longer felt separate from her own thoughts. The growling voice returned, low and intimate, its words delivered slowly now, savoring each one. It told her it hated her. It told her she was weak. It told her she had always been weak. The words weren't shouted. They didn't need to be. They were pressed into her, sinking past panic and into the places she already doubted herself. She felt herself begin to fold inward, her thoughts narrowing, her body heavy and unresponsive beneath the crushing weight, and then just as suddenly, everything shifted. The pressure vanished, not slowly, not fading away, violently. The weight was ripped off her body with enough force that she felt herself roll slightly on the mattress, gasping as air rushed painfully back into her lungs. The thing lurched sideways as if struck or grabbed by something unseen, and then it was gone, thrown off her bed and through the wall beside it, in a way that made no sense physically. There was no sound of impact, no tearing of drywall, just the abrupt absence of it. She sat up screaming. The sound tore out of her before she realized she could move again. Her throat burned, her chest heaved, her hands shook so badly she couldn't hold onto the edge of the mattress. She sobbed, folding forward, dragging in air as if she'd been underwater too long. The room was still hot, unnaturally so. Her window was open. It was winter, cold enough that her breath should have fogged the air, but the heat clung stubbornly to the space. Her covers lay in a crumpled heap across the room, near the closet, just where they'd been thrown. The lights blazed overhead, harsh and unforgiving. Fred and George were gone, not watching, not hovering, not present in any way she could feel. The dogs began barking in her parents' room, deep, frantic sounds that echoed down the hallway. Footsteps followed soon after. Her mother burst into the room, already calling her name, already bracing herself for whatever she was about to see. She found her daughter sitting upright on the bed, sobbing so hard she could barely speak. Not screaming, not flailing, just broken. Her mom crossed the room in a few steps and wrapped her arms around her, pulling her close, rocking her instinctively the way parents do when something has gone wrong, but they don't yet know how. It took several minutes before the sobbing eased enough for words to form. When the story came out, it did so in fragments. Red eyes, being held down, being told she was helpless, being choked. None of it sounded real. Not out loud. Not in a brightly lit room with a parent holding her. Even her mother's face betrayed doubt, confusion, a quiet struggle to make sense of what she was hearing. But fear doesn't always need explanation. There was something in her daughter's voice, the way she shook, the way her eyes kept darting toward the corners of the room, the way she clutched at her mother's clothes, as if letting go wasn't an option, that cut through disbelief. This wasn't a bad dream. This wasn't attention-seeking. This was terror. That was why her mother agreed to call a priest. Not because she believed in glowing red eyes or invisible attackers, but because something had happened that had left her daughter shaken in a way she couldn't explain away. Because sometimes when you don't know what else to do, you reach for whatever comfort is available. The priest never came to the house. He spoke to them briefly over the phone, asked a few general questions, offered reassurance and prayer, and that was it. There was no blessing, no ritual, no confrontation. Nothing cinematic, nothing dramatic. The conversation ended and life resumed its familiar shape. And that was the strangest part, and nothing else happened. The room cooled, the house settled, the nights passed quietly. No red eyes, no pressure on the bed, no subtle shifts in the air. The presence that had once filled the darkness was simply gone. At first, the silence felt unbearable. She lay awake night after night, listening to the quiet, waiting for the coolness that never came, waiting for the sense of being watched, waiting for something, anything, to fill the emptiness left behind. Sleep came slowly and without comfort. When she woke from nightmares, there was no reassurance waiting in the corners of the room. But slowly, something else replaced it. Relief. The fear faded first, then the expectation, then eventually the habit of waiting. She learned how to fall asleep without company, how to sit with her own thoughts without needing something else to hold them in place. Years passed. She grew older, stronger, more aware of the world and her place in it. The thoughts that had once spiraled inward loosened their grip over time, replaced by distance and perspective. Life moved forward in ways it always does, unevenly and imperfectly, but forward nonetheless. She never saw the red eyes again, not in her bedroom, not at school, not in moments of stress or fear or vulnerability. Whatever had watched her through childhood did not follow her into adulthood. It did not linger at the edges of her life. It did not return when she needed comfort again. Looking back now, she doesn't romanticize what happened. The comfort Fred and George offered doesn't outweigh the way it ended, or the realization that their protection had come with conditions. She believes now that what she experienced wasn't love or guardianship, but dependency, something that attached itself to a child who needed comfort, who needed to feel watched over, and offered safety only as long as it was needed. When she began to grow beyond it, when she no longer relied on it to feel whole or protected, it turned. That's the part that stays with her. Not the glowing eyes, not the hovering, not even the attack itself. The understanding that whatever had shared her nights for so many years hadn't been there for her at all. It had needed her. And when she no longer needed it, it tried to convince her she was helpless. Because helplessness was the only way it could survive. But it didn't, and that's where the story ends. Just a childhood experience, vivid, unsettling, and closed, like a door that was left open too long and finally slammed shut.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.